reminded me about three times, and every time it's been a great, I just believe, a great heartfelt message to do with creation, but really helps you in your minds as well. So why don't we, before we take a seat, why don't we get Dr. Taz a fantastic round of applause as we invite him.
Thanks so much, Andrew. Bless you, brother Andrew. Thank you, everybody. Now, you're not expecting me to sing or anything, are you? Yeah. We're going to give a presentation, so thank you for your welcome. And be seated. We're going to talk about, we're going to talk about Jesus Christ. We're going to talk about Jesus Christ. I'll use the microphone. And we're going to be using this screen over here, so I hope you folk can see it okay. And and the connection with Jesus Christ is we're going to talk about the rocks, the fossils, and the age of the earth. Now, Jesus said to Peter, your name is Peter, which means stone, and upon this rock I will build my church, which is the confession that Jesus Christ is Lord. And so today we've sung some beautiful songs to Jesus Christ, and I realized that I visited this church 3 years into, 7 years ago it was, my first time here. And that was really good. So I've been on, followed you on a journey quite a while. So I want to start with just illustrating the fact that, in fact, that our God is a God who made everything that there is. And we read in Psalm 24, verse 1 and 2, we read that the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. Because why is that? The world and all who live in it, because he founded it upon the seas and he established it upon the waters. So we talked about creation. Andrew mentioned about it's great to be created, and that's what sets the foundation as to where we begin. Everything belongs to the Lord. Why? Because he made it, and he made it good. He did a good job. And we read in the newspaper, though, a different story, and this is really what I'm talking about today, is in the newspapers and in the on the television, in the high school courses, and when you go to uni and college and that sort of thing, the message that comes across that's presented by people that you think know what they're talking about is that, well, the earth was not created, that everything evolved. It happened by itself over millions of years. And, you know, for many young people, when they hear this, and for many people, when they're new Christians, they hear this, they become confused. And they think, well, who am I going to believe? I feel God's presence when I'm at church and when we're worshiping, and yet when I see this stuff on the television, I have a horrible sinking feeling. You know, am I believing something which is just sort of, am I kidding myself about God? Is there really a God? So this is what I'm dealing with today, is want to give you some answers, just a couple of answers. You can talk about geology a little bit, which I studied, but I think you'll enjoy it, indicating that there is a foundation that when we trust God, when we believe his word, we're believing the truth and we can rely on it. And when we hear things which are contrary in the world, we can realize that they are lies, and that we can but we need to just understand a little bit about how it works. Now, Creation Ministries, we're an information ministry that deals with this issue. We put out DVDs and books and a magazine. Does anybody here get Creation Magazine by any chance? A few people do. I'll talk a bit more about that later on. And it's because we provide information, and there's a lot of stuff that you get confronted with. When you go and study, say you want to do medicine, say you want to do social work or something like that, and you want to help people, you get confronted with all this secular, anti-God philosophy. And it's very detailed for whatever area you're studying. And so that's why we provide a lot of books. And also we have a website which deals with stuff that's specific to all sorts of things. And we always have people contacting us and says, what about this? Or what about that? Did you read this? Are you going to tell us what to do about that? And so we've got thousands of articles on there. And it's not a very difficult name. If you want to find out about stuff about creation, you go to creation.com. Do you think you can manage that? I think you can. And creation.com. And if you want to get regular information, we send out an email every now and then, about every week or so, with update stuff relevant to what's happening in the world. It's a service we provide, and you can get connected and you can do it through the website. You just put your email address in. But what we'll do this morning is a few friends from Sydney have come along with me, and they'll hand out a sheet, something like this, the sheet, wherever it is, something like this. It's yellow there. And you can put your email address on there if you want to get connected. It's free, and you can disconnect if... But I know people that, you know, you can get, it comes about once every week, but you can get it every day if you want to. Daily email, and we know that people love to get that. So just pass it around. Make sure everybody gets the opportunity. Put your name and address, email address on it. So the earth is the Lord's because He made it. But, you know, people today deny that. Now, how do they deny it? You know... And the foundational thing as to why people don't believe the earth is the Lord's, the earth is made of rocks, is because of geology. And the Apostle Peter, in 2 Peter, he talks about scoffers who scoff at God and who scoff that Jesus is never coming back again. And these people scoff at people who love God and scoff at the Bible. And it says these scoffers, they forget a couple of things. You know, they're scoffing, they're so confident, and yet they are ignorant. They've forgotten things. And it mentions here about them, it says, these scoffers deliberately forget that long ago, by God's word, the heavens existed and the earth was formed out of water and by water. You get that? So the earth was formed out of water. Remember, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the water. So it was in the beginning, it was covered with water. So the earth was formed out of water. It's quite different from what the secular geologists say. And then it goes on to say, and they forget by these waters, also the world at that time was deluged and destroyed. So what do they forget? When was the world deluged and destroyed? Noah's flood. The whole world was deluged and destroyed, and they forget that God judged the world by a flood. And, you know, the way this has come out in our culture today, it was a philosophy that became popular about 150 years ago, a bit more, and by a guy called Charles Lyell. He was one of the guys. There are a lot of guys involved in this, but he's one of the guys, very popularized, a book on geology. You wouldn't think that geology has got anything to do with the Bible. You wouldn't think that geology's got anything to do with the gospel, would you? But this book on geology undermined the Bible in the West. In the Western culture, people believed the Bible, but this guy undermined it through a book on geology. And his book was called Principles of Geology. It came out in three volumes. The first was a long time ago, 1830, and when he published it. And his headline, or the subtitle of the book, explains sort of what it's about. And he goes on to say, this is an attempt to explain the former changes of the Earth's surface. You see, in geology, we can go and look at the rocks. I travel down the freeway today to come to your church here, and there's some cuttings with these amazing rocks. You probably never look at them, but as a geologist, I look at them. I go down the beach. I look at the rocks and the sand and the patterns and things. So we can observe. Sometimes when two people get very friendly, they'll go into a shop and they'll look at rocks, diamond rings and gold bands, you know, those sorts of things, and get an engagement ring. But you see, so they're rocks. We can observe the rocks. We can see what they look like. But, you know, what's he talking about? He's talking about the former changes, how these rocks got here. Now, we can't go back in time and look at how they got here. We can look at what they are like now. And that's what science is about. Science is about observing things, setting up experiments, measuring things, and checking out what happens. And so that's why they call geology a soft science. And geologists don't like that, but the problem is that they have, and I'm a geologist, the problem that we have is we can't go back and look at what happened. So how do we overcome that? Well, Charles Lyell explains how he was planning to do it. And he says, I'm going to do it. Well, first of all, if we had somebody who was there and saw it and explained it, then that would make a difference, wouldn't it? If somebody wrote it down, what happened? And that's what the Bible is. Somebody actually wrote it down and told us. But this guy didn't like what was in the Bible. And so he said he was going to do it by this, by observing, by reference to causes now in operation. So I'm going to watch what happens now. I can see that. And I'm going to assume that that's the way it happened in the past. And so that's the whole basis for the whole modern philosophy on geology, and it goes into biology, and all the teaching in high school and David Attenborough and everything like that is based on this idea of look of assuming that what we see happening now is what happened in the past. Now, you think that's got nothing to do with the Bible. Well, the Bible says that God created in 6 days. Do we see creation in 6 days happening today? No, we don't. So he's not going to use that as an explanation. Do we, the Bible says the world was deluged and destroyed. Do we see that happening today? No, we don't. So he's not going to use that as an explanation. So you see how subtle that is. Without even mentioning the Bible, he's undermined it. He's put it out of the arena. And he knew what he was doing. Talking to his friends, he said his aim was to free geology from Moses. So, and it's been very successful in our culture. So I just put that up there so that when you see these things, you know that it's based upon somebody saying, I'm not going to believe what the Bible says about what happened to the world. And so don't be deceived by what David Attenborough says on TV and what your professors say when you're learning, studying different things on environmental science. Realize that he's based all his ideas on this assumption that he's not going to believe what the Bible says. And so out of that comes this, you might have seen it, it's a bit daunting, geological timescale. Have you seen things like this? It's not that bad, really. It's just a picture of all the sorts of animals that are found as fossils. Not all of them, but some of them. And it's the order in which they're found. So you find right down deep, you find things like these trilobites, and that's a big name. Can you see that there? It's like a little sort of a cuttlefish or crayfish or something like that. It's a trilobite, and they're extinct. We don't see them today. But it's right down deep, and they find them in a lot of rocks in Wales was where they found them. And Wales, the name for Wales is Cambria, an old-fashioned name. And so they call those rocks Cambrian rocks, right? And so, and then because of Charles Lyell's assumption, they assumed it happened slowly. And so they got a date for it. They say it's 600 million years old. When you dig out a fossil, it doesn't have a label on it. Says, I'm 600 million years old. You dig out the fossil, and then the assumption is you put the age depending on what you think happened in the past. And there was never a flood, you see, according to this. So anyway, 600 million years old. You've got the fish. You see this fish here? They find fish fossils in Devon. So guess what they call the rocks that the fish fossils are found in? Devonian. Sounds so complicated, doesn't it? But it's actually not. It's very, very simple. And then they find, down in, there's some mountains in Switzerland, the Jura Mountains, and when they go up there, they find fossils of dinosaurs and shells in the mountains in Europe, in the Jura Mountains. And these are the dinosaurs, and here's the ammonites. And so they call them the Jurassic, because they find them in the Jura Mountains. So that's the general idea. And because of Charles Lyell, you don't see any evidence for the flood. They just sort of, here you got the Jurassic 100 million years ago. And a lot of Christians sort of think, well, that is really complicated. I can't understand how that fits in with the Bible. And so that's what creates the conflict in us, understanding and be confident in the Word because of things like this which we get encountered in the world. And so this philosophy is everywhere. You go to, say, Point Perrin in Western Australia 4,000 million years ago. You go to the Glasshouse Mountains in Brisbane here 20 million years ago. It's on the road signs. If you go down to Tasmania, Eagle Hawk Neck, and you look at it, it says 300 million years ago. You're familiar with those signs, aren't you? Everywhere you go, that's the way it is. And so this philosophy just comes out everywhere. And, you know, as a Christian, often it's very confusing and complicated. And we wonder, you know, we sort of really feel that we can't wholly accept what the Bible says because of this stuff. And often we feel that inside. And so, like this guy here, his name is Robert, and he says this. He says, a few months ago I started on my high school geology course. High school. And he says, my faith was weakened by the evolutionary arguments presented in it. And that happens to young people a lot. Is that when they first confront, it happened to my granddaughter just this year when she started learning about evolution in grade 10, year 10. And she was really, really distressed by what she heard. And this guy says, my faith was weakened. And that's what happens. And that's why it's so important to get this information. And you see, one of the reasons why our faith is weakened is because when you look at those fossils, the idea is that there's been death and suffering over millions of years, and that's led to our existence, evolution. Whereas the Bible says that God created a good world and it was mankind's actions that brought death into the world. Totally different. And because we know what caused it, man's sin, we know the solution, which is Jesus Christ, his salvation. And we can't be right. So we just need to sort out how we explain that. And it's a very simple thing. And just to sort of reinforce this issue of the millions of years, of course, are tied into those fossils I showed you. And a lot of Christians think, well, maybe we can solve it by saying that the days were long periods of time, maybe millions of years long for each of the days in Genesis. Or maybe there was a gap between Genesis 1 verse 1 and Genesis 1 verse 2, and we put all the time in there. Or maybe, you know, there's various ways that Christians try to fit it together. And various these ways are taught in theological college, actually. And it creates confusion. But no matter how you try to put these millions of years in, here you got Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And God says, he looked at all that he made, and what did he say? It's very good. Yet if we put millions of years in, we put all the fossils in before Adam and Eve. And the fossils are speaking of death, suffering, and disease. Doesn't belong there. So do you see the problem? And so it's a matter of explaining these fossils. That's the simple thing. And how does that fit? Well, it doesn't fit before Adam and Eve. It happens afterwards. It had to be afterwards. What was it? It was Noah's flood. That's the answer. And that's a very, very... The Bible talks about that. So I'm going to just touch a little bit on Noah's flood. So we got Bible history. The amazing way. It's his story. God's dealings with people. And you know, right at the beginning, God created one man and one woman at the beginning. And he loved them. And he loves us too, because he loves each one of us. And then there was a fall, corruption, where there was sin came into the world. And that's why there's death in the world. That's why there's suffering. And then we read about the Noah's flood, the catastrophe. And then there's the Tower of Babel, the confusion of the languages. And then there's a whole lot about the history of Israel. And eventually the promised Messiah comes, Jesus. He's born in Bethlehem, the Son of God. And he died on the cross to pay the penalty of our sins. By his stripes we're healed, and by his death he gave us life. And then there's a promise of a new heaven and a new earth. This is a history. It's based on people who saw it happen. It's not an imaginary thing. It's not a legend. It's based on what really happened, and we can't go into that all now. But the key thing is the catastrophe of Noah's flood. And then when we look back in time, we see the effects of the flood. We don't look back to creation. And so Noah's flood is the key. And this guy, Robert, he says, my faith was weakened by the evolutionary arguments in geology. He goes on to say, a few months later, I received quite a number of books for Christmas, your books. I must say that these books, as well as this website, have greatly strengthened my faith. That's the point. He's a guy, he grew up in a church. He loved the Lord, and his faith was weakened through his high school learning, but these books strengthened his faith. And that's why we brought a heap of books, and that's why we're talking today, that's why we've got a website, is so that if you get questions and doubts, what's the name of the site? About creation? Creation.com. You go there, you type in your question, and you'll find articles which will answer your questions. And if you don't, send us an email. Say, what about this? And we'll research and write one for you. And when as I was growing up, you know, I was wondering about this, how it all fitted together. And I developed in a little bit geological model about how the Bible fits with the world. You know, if the Bible's true, how does that affect geology? And it's not very complicated. And there's a DVD about it, and that's why I left my work. I worked as an engineer with the Electricity Commission, and I went back to uni, studied geology when the other students were younger than my children, and that was really good. So now I work with Creation Ministry. So now, as I looked at what the Bible says, look at this geological column. Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to remove the dates. They're things which distract us. They put us on the wrong path. So and as I said, the fossils don't have a date on them. And then we just look at the rocks and the evidence, and what we found is that this part is the waters were rising as the waters of the flood were rising and the whole world was being deluged and destroyed, we see the effects of it, and these are all these fossils that are buried. Plus, there's a lot of stuff underneath as well. And this part here is that the waters were falling. We read about how the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat, and the waters were going down, and Noah was letting the raven out, and then the dove came back with a... we read about that. That's the waters of falling, eroding the continents, and this part is post-flood. And so once you understand that, you understand how it all fits together, and it's very, very simple. I want you to do that. So I want to just touch just briefly about Noah's flood and run through this. It's actually a picture of salvation. You can use it as an analogy of what Jesus Christ has done for us, in that he saves us. God saved Noah in the ark. It says, God said to Noah, I am going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. He said, I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So, build yourself an ark. That's the way that I'm going to save you, with this ark. It's like an illustration of Jesus. And the ark, the Bible describes, we can't go into it all in detail, but it was a very large vessel. It was longer than a football field, 140 meters long at least, higher than a four-story building, a lower deck, a second deck, a third deck, window along the top, and... incredibly stable, a capacity of some 15,000 tons, which is not the biggest boat, but it is a very big boat. And Korean naval architects have analyzed the shape and they found it incredibly stable. So that's the ark. And of course, lots of animals had to go on. A lot of people think, well, how did he get all the animals on the ark? Think about the dogs, the Great Dane, the Chihuahua, and all the other thousands of different kinds of dogs. How would he take those? Here's some of the dog kind. Lots and lots of dogs would have been on the ark. Wouldn't have been fun, yapping and all the noise, dog fights. Well, actually, you only need to take two dogs on. That's all you need to take on, because these are all varieties of dogs which have been bred from an original mongrel kind which were on the ark. So maybe something like the wolf that lives in the forest in Europe. And it's the same with the dinosaurs. You know, there's all sorts of different dinosaurs that are named, thousands of them. And yet, when you look at them, you find, well, these are variations on a theme. So you just, for all the ceratopsian dinosaurs, probably just two would be all you'd need. So you'd get them all on. Now, that's not evolution. Variation is the way God created the world. He created different kinds to vary. And so that's why it's really exciting. You meet people. It'd be terrible if everybody looked exactly the same. A friend of mine, she is one of identical twins. And they had a ball when she was in her teens, you know, when boyfriend had come along and sent out a sister. He wouldn't be able to tell the difference. But at least God made us so that there's variety. It's not evolution, and I'm not going into that right now, but there's a book, Refuting Evolution, which talks about genetics and variation and how all this is exactly what the Bible predicted, and it's going the wrong way for evolution. It actually goes against the idea that, say, lizards turned into birds, or that bacteria changed into people. It goes the wrong way for that, but we won't go into that now. Anyway, the animals went on the ark. The fountains of the deep broke open. The Bible describes that. The windows of heaven, and it says the waters prevailed, and on the earth they came up and up, lifted up the ark, and it continued to lift the ark up until every high mountain under the entire heavens were covered. And it says that everything that had the breath of life in it perished. Birds, livestock, animals that creep on the land, everything died except those which were on the ark. Now, my ancestors, I got ancestors that were on the ark. Now, I don't know about you. I guess you would have had ancestors on the ark as well. Everybody that's alive today on the earth, you know, our ancestors go back to Noah and his family. Some are related to Shem, some to Ham, some to Japheth, but we all go back to Noah and his family, and there's genetic information actually supports that, but we won't go into that now. And it says about the waters that they rose greatly on the earth, and every high mountain under the entire heavens were covered. So that's a clear indication it was not a local flood. It was a global flood, affected the whole of the earth. And a lot of Christians, because geologists don't see any evidence for the flood, because they don't see the evidence, because they're not looking for it. And so a lot of Christians think, well, there is no evidence for the flood, so it must be describing a local flood. But no, it's not. It's describing a global flood because it covered the highest mountains. And people say, well, how in the world is that possible? Where did all the water come from? Well, if you just look at the Earth today, you've got the continents are high, the ocean basins are low, and that's the why we don't have water all around our feet today, because the ocean basins are low. But if you just push the ocean basins up and even out the surface of the Earth, there's enough water on the Earth now to cover the whole Earth to 3 kilometres. So the water's already there, and so that's why as creation geologists, they think that the flood involved movements of the Earth's crust and the plates on the Earth, and so that the Earth's up and down movement caused the waters to cover the whole of the Earth. It was a great tectonic event. And we read there about how the Noah's in the ark, and it says, on the 17th day of the 7th month, the ark came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. Don't you like the way it's so precise? 17th day of the 7th month? I mean, it's not once upon a time stuff, is it? This is history. This, and it's like Noah is recording it in his logbook. And these are the mountains of Ararat in Turkey. Came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. 5,000 metres high these mountains are. Mount Kosciuszko is 2,000 metres high. And we don't really know. I'll just warn you that we don't really know if this was the exact mountain. It's got that name. And so it's a traditional site. But it might have just been given that name by people, locals, you know, thousands of years ago. And there are other people who think it might have been an area just nearby there, which is also similarly high. But so the waters came to rest on the mountains of Ararat. So where did all the waters go to? Well, I'll just throw up a little picture of the world, see if you can figure out where they might have gone. You got any ideas? That's the Pacific Ocean. You see Australia and you see North America, 72% of the Earth is covered by water. And so when you just go down there and look out at Bay City Church, that's really appropriate, isn't it? Because Bay City is a memory of the flood. Go and have a look at the waters. So that's where they've gone. And there's a book called The Answers Book, which deals with a lot of the questions, maybe some of the ones that are in your mind, about how did he feed all the animals? What did he do about cleaning up all the mess after them? And how did he build the ark? And all those sorts of things. Radioactive dating are in this book, The Answers Book. Now, the thing is, I'm just going to touch a little bit on the evidence that we can see around about us. It's everywhere. Most people don't see it because they don't know what to look for. So I'm going to just point to you to some things of how to see it, and then you'll see it everywhere. And, for example, in Australia, there's a huge area of Australia, that yellow part, which is covered in sediments. And actually, there's a lot more, but this is just the topmost layer of sediments which are there. And there are lots of dinosaur fossils found in there. And so a lot of these sediments are called Jurassic sediments, dinosaurs. And you can see that the sediments come right down as far as Newcastle, and they go right out into South Australia, Northern Territory. These are the sediments. And it's got lots of artesian water in there. So in this place here, up around Winton, that area, farmers find fossil shells in their paddocks. I was just talking to a guy last night. He said he saw a farmer come through from Winton. He had a trailer load of these amazing ammonite shells, and he just picked them up in his paddock. So clearly it was one. And the geologists talk about it being a great inland sea. They say it was 100 million years ago. So they don't connect it with the flood. But remember, it didn't have a little label on it. You just got to remember that. This was the inland sea as a result of the floodwaters reaching their peak. You find these swimming animals, a plesiosaur, in a paddock. This one's four metres long. Farmer found its head, skull of this thing. These are two paleontologists from the Queensland Museum digging in it out. And they said there must have been some catastrophe here. I mean, there'd have to be a catastrophe to bury a swimming animal like that, you know? Because when you go running down into the water, do you notice this? You sort of run into the water and you're running across the sand and you're, oh, yuck, all these dead fish lying on the bottom, waiting to be fossilized. No, if things die, other things come and eat them and you go in, it's just sand, isn't it? And so for this thing to be buried, the whole lot would have had to be buried rapidly. And that's evidence of the catastrophe of Noah's flood, and even the bones in its flippers were found that were preserved. And also, not far away, And we could go into lots and lots of fossils that are found in this area. There's a land animal which is found, an ankylosaur, an armored dinosaur. And this one was in a different farm, a different paddock, 10 kilometers or 20 kilometers away. And even here, you got the details of the skin. So again, buried. And it wasn't just a great inland sea. This was a great inland catastrophe. And this is a model of it, which is on the display in the museum there up near Richmond. It's there's Winton and Richmond. There's a whole lot of towns there where they find these fossils. So we got the evidence for Noah's flood of these fossils and the evidence of them being buried rapidly, which is exactly what you'd expect as a result of Noah's flood. There's a book called Dinosaur Challenges. You find dinosaur eggs, you find dinosaur nests, you find dinosaur footprints, and you find the dinosaur bone beds. And this talks about some of that amazing evidence. If you go to Central Australia, there's Ayers Rock, Uluru, and just down the road is Catachooka, Many Heads, and you go down there. This is amazing evidence for Noah's flood as well. And I'll just point, as you walk into these, the Olgas as they're called, you go down to the Valley of Winds. Has anybody been down here, down to this area? It's a really cool place, a good place to go. But you walk in, the thing that's amazing is you realize that these big mounds, which go hundreds of meters up above the desert sand, these mounds are made of rounded boulders that have been rounded by water washing, rivers, carried in the rivers, you know. And they're not little, it's not gravel, they're great boulders. And the whole thing is just chock-a-block full of boulders. And these boulders indicate that they've been washed in, they're sitting in a certain angle, which indicates the direction of the water. And you say, well, was that a little bit of water? You know, just like we see happening now? Or is that a lot of water? It's clearly a lot of water. And so we see the evidence of catastrophe again. It's common right throughout. When you go out on your tourist things and and have a look around at the world, you see this evidence. And there's another book called The Young Earth, which talks about a lot of these sorts of evidence. Quite fantastic stuff in there. Now, when you go down to, or go up to, Katoomba, down to Echo Point, the Three Sisters, you see that these beautiful sisters, they're not actually a singing group, are they? They're just some rock outcrops. It's very stony-faced ladies they are. But anyway, you see these three sisters, and they're made of sandstone. And you see that the same sandstone in the foreground is like the same in the distance. So this sandstone goes for a long way. It actually extends from Newcastle all the way down to Wollongong on the coast. And we can see this, not exactly the same sandstone, but you can see it driving as you drive around Sydney. And so here we can see Sydney. It's called the Sydney Basin. Can you see that? That's the Sydney Basin. It's up to 5 kilometres thick of sandstone. It's got sandstone, it's got mudstone, it's got lots of coal in it, and they use the coal to make the electricity out there up in the Bayswater and those sorts of places. And so when you look at the Three Sisters, you can see that these layers of rock, that the sand is deposited in layers called strata. Can you see that? You can see this really great when you drive around the freeways. And you also notice that across the strata, you don't always see it, but it's often there. You see these lines on an angle. They're called cross beds, right? Have you seen that? Have you ever noticed that? I bet you've never noticed it. Hey, next time when you drive down the freeway, if you're driving, don't look. But if you're in the passenger car of the car, you have a look and see if you can see it. But you'll see these cross beds. Now, the thing is that this sand was washed in there. And this is a little diagram illustrating how it happens. You've got the water coming in, and it's carrying a lot of sand, and as it's coming in, it drops the sand on the front edge of these little sand dunes on the bottom, right? Can you see that? And you can see, sometimes when you're standing on the beach and the water just washes over your feet, you can see little sand dunes that actually move across the bottom of the across the bottom there where the water's washing them. And that's this what's happening here. You can see the sand dunes down here. These are vertically exaggerated. And you can see the cross beds where the sediment has dropped on the front. Can you see that? So when you drive down the freeway in future, you look at the thickness of those beds. Some of them are 3 metres thick. And so you think, man, that would have taken a lot of water to wash all that into place. See, just imagine how much water it is next time you have a look. And you look at the cross beds, that indicates something of the direction in which the water was flowing. Generally, these cross beds are the sort of upstream side, and so you can get an idea of the way the water was flowing. And geologists do that. They call it paleo currents, the old currents that were flowing around. And so this indicates a lot of water. As a matter of fact, you can trace these sand strata right across the Sydney Basin, 250 kilometres across. And there are places in Sydney where you can go, I'd have to look it up, but there's parks where you can see outcrops, and you see these cross beds are actually being bent up because of the power of the water. They've been laid down and the water has then bent them over. They're called recumbent cross beds. So geologists recognize the power of the water which deposited this. And you're talking about water 250 kilometers wide, waves that are 10 and 20 meters high, washing all this sand into place. So does that sound like a big flood to you? Does that sound like the sort of thing that happens all the time? Doesn't really, does it? You know, that was the idea of Elijah. Are we just going to use things we see happening today? We don't see that happening today. And it fits in with Noah's flood. And so we look at another interesting thing. You look at these, go up to Echo Point, notice how flat the surface is. How did it get to be so flat? Well, you see, as the floodwaters were receding, they originally covering the whole of the earth, and so as they were going back into the ocean basins were sinking, it carved the surface flat. So everywhere you go, or lots of places you go, you find flat surface, or they might be undulating a little bit wavy, but generally they're flat plateaus. And so that's carved as the floodwaters were receding. And then Noah's letting the birds out. Remember, we talked about that, the raven and the bird. And as the waters were going down, he wanted to know when the land was dry. And eventually the water got less and less, and it carved these great big valleys. And you see those all over the place. And what's there now in these valleys is basically a small little creek compared to what actually carved the valley. And so those features, when you see them, point to Noah's flood. The other interesting thing is you find rivers that actually flow through mountain ranges. Does that sound strange to you? They flow through the mountain range. They don't go around it. They go straight through it. Well, it certainly sounds strange to geologists, and they've been trying to figure out how it happens. This is the Fink River. And the way it happens is that the waters of Noah's flood were high over the whole land, and then as they were flowing out to sea, they were overtopping the mountain ranges, and then eventually some of the range got above the water, and so the water went through the low part, and then as the water continued to flow, it carved that low part right the way down, and so you've got all these what they call water gaps. Sometimes it doesn't carve it all the way down, it just carves it part the way down, and it's their wind gaps, but they cut right across the mountain ranges, and so you'll see those evidence of Noah's flood. Here you've got the Warragamba River, and there's a dam built on it, but this is an example of a water gap where you've got a river that flows through a mountain, cut down through a plateau. Here's the dam. You can see the valley behind it, the river behind it, dammed up behind it. And when you look at it in Google Maps, Google's actually a great way to see these things. And you can see there, have a look at that. That's the river that flows right through the mountain. So, and that was carved by the tail end waters of Noah's flood. Another evidence is you find these steep cliffs, escarpments, cliffs. This is the Olgas. And you can see that there's been some erosion. The Olgas have been falling apart a little bit. And so there's a little bit of debris down the bottom. See that? Not much. There's a few big boulders around, but not very much. If it had been going on for millions of years, you would expect to find lots and lots of stuff just sloping out. But you've got these steep, steep cliffs and not very much at the bottom. And that indicates that when it was carved, it was recent that it was carved, and it indicates the receding waters of Noah's flood did it. And so little debris that's there. So there's a few little evidences. We could go into a lot more, but that's probably about as much as I want to go into. But I just want to mention a couple of other things and some resources. But One of the big stumbling blocks for a lot of people is radioactive dating. They think it proves that the world is millions of years old. But in actual fact, radioactive dating is really, it's based on assumptions. It's not based on observation. Certainly we make observations, but the calculation of the date is based on assumptions. Doesn't measure the age. Now, this is a machine that's used to measure, you know, one of the things, it's an argon mass spectrometer. Sounds complicated. But it's used to measure, I used it in some of my work when I was at the university, but it doesn't measure the age. It measures argon. So you can calculate, it measures how much argon is in a sample. So what's that got to do with the age? Well, there's a story that goes behind it. And the story has got to do with how the argon got in there and what happened to it since. And it all depends on the assumption about the story. And so it doesn't measure age. So here you got an hourglass, and they say, look, it's just like an hourglass. You've got this potassium, it decays by radioactive decay into argon, and you just measure what's there, and it's as simple as that. Accepting that, we can measure it, that's for sure, very accurately. But we don't know the starting amount, because we can't go back in time to measure that, so we have to assume it. And so it's all based on assumptions. We don't know if there's been any gained or lost there, so that's an assumption. We don't know if there's any been gained or lost there, so there's more assumptions. And we don't know if the rate's always been the same, so that's another assumption. And so geologists do their calculation, come up with an age, but nobody ever believes it until they check with everything else and see if it makes sense. If it doesn't make sense, they say, oh, there's been something, you know, this might have inherited argon, or this might have been loss of potassium or something. They come up with a story. Now, I'll skip this bit, but basically that's how radioactive dating works, is that it's based on assumptions, and those in the know they never accept the number unless they know what it's going to agree with. But there is only one way. There is a way of knowing the age of something, very accurate way, and there's only one way. And that is, if you want to know the age, you have to actually have somebody who was there. It's called history. Does that make sense? Now, I know my age. My mother was there at the time. And there was a doctor, and they wrote it down in a birth certificate. So I know my age to the nearest day. And that's how we know the Battle of Trafalgar, to the nearest day, the 21st of October, 1805. They didn't do it by doing carbon-14 on a ship or something like that. It was based on history. And so that's how we know the age of the Earth. Here we've got a little diagram showing heads. And this, the first one here is a head of Adam, and his son was Seth, right? Remember Seth? I don't remember him, but I read about him. And Adam was so many years old when Seth was born, and then so many years old Seth, he had Enosh, and then goes all the way down to Noah. Here's Noah up here, see that? And then from Noah's son, Shem, and then it goes all the way down to Abraham, and then we know about Abraham's son. They had difficulty having children, didn't they? That's history. It's not made up. It's not a legend or anything like that. It's just life. It's family. And they recorded it, and it goes through to David. And then one line goes through Nathan. It goes through to Mary, and she's the mother of Jesus Christ. And the other line is through Solomon, and it goes through the line and to Joseph, who was the husband of Mary. And so because of this, it's got the ages recorded, how old they were when certain things happened. We can figure out, and it's not complicated, that the world is about 6,000 years old. That's about how old it is. And so when we look at this Bible history, the way God has dealt with people, we can have confidence that God did create us. And we don't need to be confident that we live in a fallen world. We all experience that. But we can be confident that the salvation that comes through Christ is based on reality, not mythology, as is the idea of evolution and the geological stuff that we get. Now, I just want to say, okay, we've skimmed a lot of things, and you might have questions, and I want to encourage you to just get informed. One of the good things to do is to get something coming into your home regularly. So if you've subscribed to the email alert, that will be helpful. It comes in every week or so, and you just have a look and say, well, that's interesting. And it's a fairly painless way of getting informed. Another good way is through Creation Magazine. And I'll explain that in a minute. There's a guy called Kenneth. He says, I was raised in the church until my teens before rejecting it and declaring myself an atheist agnostic. Do you know anyone like that? Do you know anyone that sort of come up through the church and then suddenly say, well, I'm an atheist? The creation evolution issue was the number one sticking point for me. Now, I'm not saying it's for everybody, but it was for him. And he says, how could I possibly believe the Bible if it was wrong from the very start? So getting information to people can be very, very helpful. And Creation Magazine, it comes out every 3 months, so it's sort of a trickle feed sort of thing. And it's 4 issues a year, $28 for a subscription. It's colour. And you'll find that it's easy to read. You'll find that the article's being short. My wife enjoys reading it, and she's not really into science, and she actually is one of the people that critiques it and says, "This is what do you mean by this? And this doesn't seem to be right, and I don't like that picture." So, and we feed that back into the system. But the Creation Magazine is a great thing. And if you'd like to get it, if you take out a subscription today, we'll give you a free back issue straight off. So you've got one immediately. And then your sub will arrive. If you take out a 3-year subscription, it's a bit cheaper. We'll give you a free back issue, plus a free DVD, just a little encouragement. And you can also get it as a digital sub, for a little bit, up to five devices. You can share it with your kids or your friends and that sort of thing. So if you want to get it, they're going to hand around a sheet, something like this, and you just basically put your name and address so we know where to send it. That's all. And there's a little bit up there on that side. Can you see that little, if you rip that off and then go to the people at the back, the friends of the Creation Ministries, they will make sure you get your free DVDs and that. So these guys are going to hand it around. And again, just make sure that it gets passed on. And some of the things that are in it. Thank you very much, fellows. That's really good. You know, you hear lots of stuff about how things take millions of years to form. Topols, millions of years to form. But, you know, there's so many things that we're told and we believe it, and it's wrong. Now, opals can form really quickly. There's a guy up at Lightning Ridge in New South Wales, and he has been able to make opals in Vegemite jars. And he puts the sediment in and the liquid, and within 10 days, the opal colouring, the sediment has sort of been transformed into an opal sort of format. It's exactly the same mineral structure as opal, just 10 days. So that's one of the things we do in Creation Magazine. You'll read things that you think, wow, I didn't know that. And another thing is it answers questions like, well, if there was just one man and one woman at the beginning, where did all the different races come from? How can you do that just from one man and one woman? And that's a big problem for a lot. And we've actually got an article about a couple that explain it. You know, one of the big things is, you know, the idea is that apes evolved into humans. And so you got apes, so they're sort of dark-skinned, and the Europeans are light-skinned, and it's a very racist idea. And people get the idea that different coloured skin means different evolution, and it's not that at all. You know, and here's this couple in England, they had twin girls. And here's their twin girls. One's fair and one's dark. That's nothing to do with evolution, it's just genetics, and so Adam and Eve couldn't have been blue-eyed blondes. Because they wouldn't have the information to have variety. I'm not saying blue-eyed blondes don't have any information, but if you know what I mean, it's a genetic thing. And this is how they are when they've grown up a little bit. Isn't that cute? Just in the one family. And the mum says, I don't even notice that they're different colours. They're just, my, you know, my girls, and we love them. And so that's the sort of thing. Now, you might be asking about, thinking about books. Well, one of probably the best books would be Evolution's Achilles Heel. It's just come out, deals with the whole issue, simple. And there's a DVD come out, and Pastor Andrew is wanting to get the DVD and show it at the church sometime. So this is the book. That's available today. The DVD will be available probably at the end of this month. And there's an intro pack, those two books, Answers book, Refuting Evolution. If you want to, you can get them in a pack with a DVD. There's a little booklet, The Genesis Flood. I wrote it, and I just read it again recently, and I thought, that's not too bad, actually. Did I write that? Anyway, it's amazing. It's only a skinny book. And there's a book about dragons, dinosaurs and dragons. It's amazing. Did you know that there's dinosaurs? People have seen them. They call them dragons. And then there's children's books, Please Nana, What is God? Please Nana, What is Death? And about Adam and family. You can get them in a pack. And if you're not into reading, you can get DVDs as well. There's quite a lot of DVDs you can look at. Plus, you can get them in a pack, which is quite cheap. And So I just really want to encourage you. We talked about rocks, fossils and the flood, and you think, well, man, I didn't really think that had anything to do with church or Jesus or the Bible. But you see, it's got a lot to do with it, hasn't it? And I hope now that when you go out and go driving and you can see these things, you say, wow, look, there's a water gap. That's the flood. And you see it everywhere now. And the thing is, Noah's Ark, it's the salvation by faith. Noah, when warned about things not yet seen, in holy fear, he built an ark to save his family. And his family was saved. And that's what God wants to do with you. He wants to use you to save your family. And the people went on through the door. The door was open. And the ark was a way of salvation in the middle of God's judgment. And Jesus Christ is our way of salvation. And he saves us from judgment. And he gives us new life. And he gives us everything. You know, we're reconciled to God. But the door was open, but not everybody went on. Only 8 people went on. And it's the same with Jesus Christ. The door is open today. And so the key thing is, the door's not going to be open forever for you. And there is a time when it need to go on. And the time is today. That's the day. The time is now. And that's when you need to go on. Jesus said, I am the door. If any man enter in, he shall be saved. So thanks very much for the privilege of sharing. And Pastor Andrew, did you want to just wrap it up or whatever? I wake